everybody, welcome to the X Report. I'm Raven X, and we're recording this on Friday morning. And so, in just over, 36 hours, we would have seen the last match from John Felix Anthony Cena. That's right, after an illustrious 23-year career, John Cena is officially retiring. Tomorrow night is Saturday Night Main Events following his match against Gunther. And unlike most wrestlers, I think he's actually going to be done. I don't think he's going to come back. So if this truly is the end, let's give Johnny Boy his flowers. Ethan, throughout your wrestling watching career and experience, what would you say is your favorite John Cena match and or moment?
Favorite John Cena match, it would probably be I think it's the I Quit match against JBL.
Yeah,
I forgot which pay-per-view it was. I think it was Unforgiven.
My gosh, I know exactly what you're talking about. It was either Judgment Day or Armageddon, because I know exactly which match you're talking about, because that's my favorite John Cena match, too.
That and favorite John Cena moment was back when he was the Doctor of Thugonomics and him, like, cooking people with raps. I thought it was funny.
Yeah, we're definitely one for one with the match. I had the John Cena disc. And so that'd be the match. Like, obviously, the first one was like a little biography about him. And the second one was just some of his matches up to that point. And that was the one, like, I always went back to. Still one of my all-time favorite matches. And plus, I love me some JBL. My favorite John Cena moment? I don't really know if I have, like, one specific moment that sticks out. But I just remember being... No. Okay. So, this isn't like a favorite moment, but it's just a funny one. So, do you remember Charlie Haas? Yeah. So, I was a kid and I got tickets to Raw. And this is when John Cena was injured. I don't remember what year. It might have been 2008. I don't remember. But I remember being like... I obviously loved John Cena. I was probably wearing my John Cena stuff. And, like, John Cena's music hits. And I'm so excited. I'm like, heck yeah, John Cena's going to be here. I think it was going to be here. And it wound up being Charlie Haas. And I remember being pissed. I was sick about that. Since then, I've seen John Cena in person. But it's, like, since I wasn't, like, a fan anymore. But that's always something I kind of think back to when it comes to John Cena. So, yeah, can't pinpoint a moment. But big ups to John. Like I said earlier, wasn't dying to see his retirement tour. But... he absolutely deserved one. So, thank you, John, for everything you did for the WWE. Now go away. We got a cool show for y'all. Obviously, we are going to make our final college football playoff predictions as well. Give our thoughts on Notre Dame opting out of their bowl game entirely. We're also going to take a look at the interesting decision of the Indianapolis Colts signing Phillip Rivers, and whether or not we think this could actually save their season. And then kind of wrap things up with the NBA and figure out which path is more likely for CP3, retirement early or signing with a contender. Now, before we get to any of that, please be sure to check out the export.net. I repeat, export.net for exclusive sports content written by yours truly and fellow export writers. Previous episodes of our lovely podcast and our YouTube channel entitled The X Report. So, without further ado, let's go ahead and kick things off talking about some college football. Now, after just missing out on a spot in the college football playoff, Notre Dame literally took their ball and went home, deciding to opt out of their bowl game, a move that has caused them, rightfully so, to get a lot of flack. They issued a statement saying, as a team, we decided to withdraw our name from consideration for a bowl game following the 2025 season. We appreciate all the support from our families and fans. We're hoping to bring the 12th national title to South Bend. And like I said, people are upset about it. One bowl official saying, what kind of message does Notre Dame send? We didn't make the playoffs, so let's just pack it up and go home. You think BYU's not upset? Hell yeah, they are. So are other teams, but they sucked it up. That's poor leadership. With another executive saying, the bowl system we now know is officially dead. RIP, it was nice while it lasted. Now, Notre Dame is not the only team to opt out of its bowl game. The first two teams were Iowa State and Kansas State, who both were fined $500,000 by the Big 12. And some other teams that have opted out who were 5-7, so really should they have had a bowl game in the first place, were Florida State, Auburn, UCF, Baylor, Rutgers, Temple, and Kansas. Ethan, what are your thoughts on Notre Dame opting out of a bowl game entirely? Do you agree with the decision, or do you think that it was kind of a punk move?
It was a punk move because, one, me and you both know, how many years has Notre Dame been in playoff contention when we all thought that they weren't, like, realistically going to win?
They got smacked.
And they got smacked. Like, last year was their best year. And honestly, like, you look at Notre Dame, they're an independent school, so they make their schedule. They don't really have a lot of strong games on their schedule, so their record is always good. And then you come into the college playoff, and they play against real competition, and they lose. So, like, me personally, I don't think until Notre Dame actually joins, like, an actual conference, I don't think they should be in the playoff, period. Because, again, what real test do we see from Notre Dame? Like, I'm trying to think, who was their biggest game this season?
They lost to Miami early. They lost to, what's it called? Oh, my gosh. Texas A&M early. They beat USC. I'm pulling it up. Because other than that, it really wasn't no crazy games. They got their biggest games out the way early. Let's see. I didn't mean basketball. I don't care about basketball.
Like, I know they play Arkansas. They destroyed Arkansas.
Yeah,
it's
okay,
not a big
on.
Game.
I got you. It was... Was that this year? No, that was a couple years ago. Like I said, started against Miami, lost by three, lost by 1 point to Texas A&M, beat Purdue decisively, beat Arkansas decisively, beat Boise State, North Carolina State, beat USC by 10, Boston College, Navy, Pittsburgh, and Syracuse, and Stanford. So I ain't really played nobody outside the first two games and USC.
And so, like, if I'm a committee looking at that, the teams that realistically had a shot at making the playoff in Miami and Texas Tech, you lost to. And then you didn't beat anybody that's worth anything. So, yeah, you don't deserve to be in the playoff. I don't care what your record is. You don't. Like, I'm pro strength of schedule. Mm-hmm. And I think that hopefully that takes a precedent moving forward. But when you look at the strength of your schedule, you didn't play anybody. So why would I want you to play against the best schools in this tournament style format? Because I basically know that you're going to lose.
The hard part about that is looking at some of the other teams that made it, which I understand why they made it because Group of Five and all that jazz, but I hear you. I mean, I think Notre Dame should have got in over Alabama just because, again, three losses. The last loss you had was a pretty embarrassing one to a fellow playoff team, and I get it. It's Georgia. Georgia was, what, third seed? But it's like, come on now. I totally agree that Notre Dame should have been left out, but I just totally disagree with how they handled it. Like, suck it up. Like, and I'm not even going to sit here and be naive and be like, yeah, because all their players would have played. No, they wouldn't. Jeremiah Love was not going to play in that bowl game. He's trying to get ready for the draft. He probably going to be, I'm willing to say he's probably going to be the only running back taken in the first round, which, as he should be. They're really, I can't think of any other running back in this class who's been as impactful. But it's still, like, I just want to see it. I want to see a good matchup because it probably would have been, what, them versus Texas, if I had to guess. That would have been cool. I mean, as far as I know, Arch Manning and them is still playing. Who else? There was another coach who talked about it. It wasn't BYU coach. Somebody else. Steve Sarkisian is somebody. But, like, they're obviously acknowledging, yeah, it hurts and it kind of sucks, but we're not just about to quit. So, and I like Marcus Freeman a lot, but this decision definitely made me lose some respect for him. But now I'm with you. If you want smoke, if you really want to be in the playoffs, you got to earn it. Be in the play. Join a conference. But all right, let's flip it in reverse. Let's talk about the top 12 teams that did make it. Here is what the playoffs are going to be looking like. Here are the first round matchups. We got 5th seed Oregon taking on 12th seed James Madison. The winner will take on 4th seed Texas Tech. 9th seed Alabama will take on 8th seed Oklahoma. The winner of that game will take on number 1 seed Indiana. Number 6 seed Ole Miss will take on number 11 seed Tulane. And the 7th seed, and that winner of that game will play 3rd seed Georgia. And 7th seed Texas A&M will take on 10th seed Miami. The winner of that game will play 2 seed Ohio State. Now, Ethan, I'm not going to lie. I'm not going to lie. Some of these first round games feel like they're going to be a bit of a wash, but I absolutely could be wrong. But when it's all said and done, who do you think is going to be college football champ? Who's winning the national title this year?
I realistically think it might end up being Ohio State running it back, just because when you look at the level of talent that they have compared to everybody else, they're the most talented team. And then I think, personally, them losing to Indiana was probably the thing that they needed. Because, again, how many times have we seen teams go undefeated and they feel themselves, and now they have their one loss that they can sit back and look on and be like, oh, we got to step our game up. So I'm gonna say Ohio State.
Yeah, I'm leaning Ohio State, too. Like, no disrespect to Miami or Texas A&M, but I think Ohio State wins that game. And then I think on their side of the bracket, obviously their biggest competition is Georgia. Georgia is going to – that's going to be a defensive game. That is going to be an ugly, gritty game. But we saw them have that type of game against Indiana. Now, granted, they lost, but I think that because they hadn't really experienced that all year, I think they're going to move differently. I think they're going to be more aggressive. And, I mean, Francisco Mendoza is better than Gunnar Stockton. So I think that that's going to work to their advantage a bit. And top of the bracket, I mean – I'm not going to lie to you. Whether it be, especially if it's Alabama, I could definitely see Alabama beating Indiana.
Yeah.
Man, I don't think, but even still, there's no team on the top of the bracket that I trust more than either Ohio State or Georgia. So I think I'm going to lean Ohio State with you. But I'm excited for games to get started. That's what, next weekend, right?
I think so.
Yeah, because next week, this week is is it Army Navy? I don't care. I'm not watching. But all right, let's go ahead and turn our attention to the NFL. And what a week it was. Starting with Thursday Night Football, the Detroit Lions get a big boost to their playoff hopes, taking down the Dallas Cowboys 44-30. The Pittsburgh Steelers get the win over my Ravens 27-22. Seattle Seahawks defense puts on a clinic in their 37-9 win over the Falcons. Tennessee Titans get the dub over the Browns after a strong game from Shadur 31-29. Miami Dolphins whoop up on the New York Jets 34-10. New Orleans Saints take down the Tampa Bay Buccaneers 24-20. Jacksonville Jaguars take advantage of Daniel Jones' injury, defeating the Colts 36-19. Minnesota Vikings get back on track and shut out the Washington Commanders 31-0. In a fun game, the Buffalo Bills ended up coming out on top 39-34 against the Bengals. Denver Broncos sweep the Raiders 24-17. In another great divisional game, the Green Bay Packers held it out against the Chicago Bears 28-21. Rams put a shellacking on the Cardinals 45-17. Houston Texans defense puts on a show in their 2010 win over Kansas City Thursday night. And in one of the most scrutinized games of the season, the Los Angeles Chargers defeated the Philadelphia Eagles in overtime after a five turnover performance by quarterback Justin Fields. On the week, I went 8-6. Ethan, you went 7-7. Look at some injuries around the league. Commanders tight end Zach Ertz is done for the year with a torn ACL, just one of many injuries that they've sustained. Lions safety Brian Branch, he's done for the year after touring his Achilles, becoming what, the second, third DB, starting DB for the Lions, whose season has been shut down prematurely. Colts quarterback is done for the season with a torn Achilles as well. We will get to that soon. And then last but not least, this one kind of felt like it was coming. After missing a long string of games, Bengals defensive end Trey Hendrickson is set to undergo core muscle surgery sometime this week and is expected to miss the next 6 weeks, essentially missing the rest of the season unless the Bengals make a deep playoff run. Spoiler alert, I don't think that's exactly going to happen. This year was a bit of a rough one. He got $29 million this year. Got that, lose that long standoff between both parties. He gets the raise and he struggled to stay healthy or really be productive. Had just 11 tackles and 4 sacks this season. As he's due to hit free agency, I know we talk so much about the Bengals defense and what they need and what they should do. Do you think that after this disappointing year, they should bring back Trey Hendrickson or move on to someone else?
Personally, I still think they should try to find a way to keep him because their defense is so bad. And I know he struggled this season and he's had a lot of injuries, but again, when he's been healthy, he's been a productive player. But I also could see it being a situation where they decide, like, hey, we're going to let him walk and we'll try to look in the draft to bring somebody in that's younger with a cheaper contract.
Yeah, it's tough. Like, if you could bring him in for cheap, I say do it. But he's already on the wrong side of 30. He's already commanding a lot of money this year, and it did not pan out. I'm the Bengals. It's like, I normally, we get on them for being cheap, but this time I would get it, especially moving on to next year. You still, again, we talked about this defense has a lot of needs, and yes, you have the draft, but you and I talked about it. All of my resources, draft-wise, free agency, is going towards building up that defense. As of right now, according to Over the Cap, they're going to have $70 million in cap space heading into next year. Yeah, I'm about to be real busy on the defensive side of the ball. Every dime I spend, I'm going to try to get one of the big fish out there. Do not have the list of free agent pass rushers in front of me, but that's what I'm going to try to do. And hell, I mean, if you can sign Trey Hendrickson back for cheap, that's great too. But I'm definitely going to try to add somebody else, especially somebody younger, because Shamar Stewart has been a non-factor. And this is to say he can't develop into one, but he's been a massive disappointment considering everything they went through with him this offseason as well. But all right, let's go ahead and talk our top 5 takeaways of week 14. Ethan, you want to start or you want me to go?
You can start.
All right, starting with my Ravens, who they don't do nothing. They proved me right in the worst type of way. Our decision to stand pat most of this season and not pursue heavily another pass rusher is biting us in the behind. Draymond Jones, who we traded for a few weeks ago at the deadline, he's been solid. I mean, he's been cool, but it's rough. Only having 19 sacks in a season, this deep into the season, is a massive problem. Our leading sacker is Mike Green, who has 2.5, which is insane. Like, there were so many times I was watching that Steelers game, and I was like, for the love of God, shed a block. And there will be times, because Aaron Rodgers, it's not like he's going to outrun you. Just hit him. But we couldn't shed a block. We couldn't consistently generate pressure. And that has been an issue throughout this season. Like, even during our win streak, our pass rush really has not been there. But we create turnovers, so it was fine. In today's NFL, especially with how pass-happy it is, you have to be able to get pressure. If you don't, you make things harder for your DBs who are already struggling in the early portion of this year. It was just agonizing. It has been agonizing for the past few weeks specifically to watch the Ravens pass rush work because they don't work. It's that they might as well just be standing there. It's frustrating.
My number 5, let's go to Philly and talk about Jalen Hurts. I'm still a big Jalen Hurts guy, pro Jalen Hurts, and I think this is probably the worst game he's had in his career. And I think it's a tough space to be in because they're on a losing streak.
Yeah, or they've lost a couple. 3 straight, because what, Dallas, yeah. Bears, and now this.
Yeah, and so they've lost a couple games. A.J. Brown has had big games, but then you look up in a clutch time situation when you need him to make a play and he gets a turnover. And all of the criticism is going to go towards him because it's like, oh, people are saying, like, oh, he's not a franchise guy. He's not the guy that we think. And I disagree because, again, for me, I also look back and say, like, hey, when it was a game in the Super, the biggest game of the season last year, and Saquon Barkley couldn't get going, who stepped up? It was Jalen, but right now he has to get back on track.
Yeah. Me and my friend and co-host of the XO Football Lounge, he's a huge Eagles fan, so we did like an emergency pod after the game. We talked a lot about that. It was, I have another takeaway about Jalen Hurts, but we'll get to that. Number four for me is Kamari Lassiter is the best cornerback two in the league. I mean, watching Sunday night's game, I've been saying this for months now, I think the Texans have the best defense in the league. And of the great talent that they have, you can make an argument that Kamari Lassiter was the best player on there. Obviously, when you got Darius Stingley on the other side, quarterbacks don't really want to test him. But Kamari Lassiter, you don't really want to smoke with him either. Finished the game with six tackles, had two passes defended, and a clutch interception. I mean, he's just that dude. He's one of those guys. I look at him how I look at T. Higgins. Where on most teams in the league, he would be their number one corner. But because he's in Houston, he's a number two. But he's thriving in that role.
My number four is, man, that guy, that Packers Bears game was great. Taylor Williams showed signs of brilliance. But again, when you needed him to make a play, he went for the splash play that cost the team. I don't know if you watched that game,
no, of course.
But like, yeah, at the end, did you see DJ Moore wide open?
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, hey, if you would have hit DJ Moore, you would have picked up the first down and maybe could have got a touchdown because with his ability to run after the catch, but you went for the splash play and it cost your team a big win. And so he's definitely grown and developed, but he still has those tendencies of like, I want to make the big splash play instead of making the like consistent, like just mundane play that could get you extra possessions.
And that's the Caleb Williams experience, because we definitely saw it a lot at USC. We were seeing it in his first year. Man, that played a role why he was getting sacked so much, because he wouldn't get let go of the ball. But it is so funny because, like, obviously that pick, which was a great play by Keyshawn Nixon, that previous touchdown to Olamide Zaccheaus was a beautiful throw. Probably the best throw I saw all weekend. It was gorgeous. But again, like, you just want him to be a bit more consistent and just take what the defense is giving you instead of trying to force something all the time. But it's funny, my number three takeaway also deals with the Bears. That even in the feat, the Bears showed that this isn't the team of old. Like, yeah, Caleb Williams had that pick. But I mean, overall, this is a Bears team that is more consistent, a Bears team that is more competitive, a Bears team that's not going to lie down. That's why they have so many comeback victories and game-winning drives this year. I mean, and also what makes it even more impressive to me is that they were doing this without Rome Odunze, who I think is their most complete wide receiver. So, yeah, they lost, but the Bears are definitely showing that they are not to be overshadowed. They are not to be overlooked anymore.
My number three is unless they make some big moves in the offseason and acquire some more talent, I just don't see the Chiefs gaining back, running back to form. I could see them being a solid team. I could maybe see them being a wild card team. But when you're relying so much on older talent, i.e. Travis Kelce and all of those things, I just don't see them being like this perennial Super Bowl contender that they've been in years past. And personally, I'm not mad at it. But I think if they realistically want to get back into form, they're going to have to make some moves this offseason.
Yeah. I mean, I'm all for parity. I like it feeling unpredictable. Let the dynasty fall. Unless the dynasty ends up being us, then I want it to last forever. My number two is, everybody knows I love me some Jaden Daniels. Jaden Daniels is my dude, and I am rooting for him always. However, the Commanders should not have brought him back this season. Like, I know when the injury first happened, I thought he was done for the year completely. I thought it was a wrap. The way his arm bent back, I didn't even think it was a conversation. But obviously you don't play him the Broncos game because you don't want him to get killed. And, oh, turn around the Vikings game. It was clear that he wasn't healthy. Oh, and it looks like he also re-aggravated the injury. Oh, and it also doesn't help that Zach Ertz is done for the year, who's been the most reliable target all season. Like, it's one of those things with the Commanders. Like I said, I love Jaden Daniels, but you got to put his health first. He's the future of your franchise, and I'm sure he wants to play and wants to show he's healthy. Your season's over. You've already been knocked out of playoff contention. Let him ride. Let him take this time to get 100% healthy, and you just thug it out for the rest of the season and then plan towards the offseason. Playing him makes no sense to me. And honestly, I feel the same way about Joe Burrow, but, you know, whatever. Clearly, they're not going to bench him. I hope he's able to stay healthy the remainder of the season, even though the Bengals at this point mostly are just playing spoiler. But it just makes no sense to me. If you're a franchise quarterback and your season is already pretty much lost, why you bring him back just to potentially get hurt again, like we saw it with JD on Sunday?
I don't agree. My number two, I'm going to the Pittsburgh and Baltimore game. I'm going to be honest, the win was cool, but I still don't change my stance on how I feel about the Steelers team.
Absolutely not.
Like, I know the chatter has calmed down after that W, but I still think, at the end of this season, I know that the report is that they're going to at least have Mike Tomlin coach the last year of his contract and then go from there. Unless they make some drastic changes to OC, DC, and they actually let them do their job, I still think Mike Tomlin has to go. Again, he's my favorite coach in the NFL. He's the reason why I am a Steelers fan. But I realistically just think that, like, hey, if Pittsburgh wants to get back to being the type of team that they've been in years past, from a winning standpoint, I think they're going to have to bring in a different head coach.
Yeah, I was talking to somebody, and it was like, yeah, that Week 18 game, whichever coach loses should be fired. I said, honestly, if the Ravens lose and don't make the playoffs, John Harbaugh should be fired. And even if the Steelers win, Mike Tomlin should be fired. Like, because it's just going to keep being the same thing over and over again. Like, definition of insanity. My number one is, and it kind of goes to the Jalen Hurts of it all. Jalen Hurts by far played the worst game of his career. College and pro, I know he got benched in the national championship. That has nothing on what happened on Monday night. However, benching him only does more harm than good. There is no world we live in where someone can realistically try to tell me, nah, hear me out though. If Tanner McKee was on the field, this wouldn't be happening. No world we live in. And I have more thoughts, but I'm just going to leave it at that.
My number one is the Browns are going to brown. We all saw the matchup between Cam Ward and Shedeur Sanders. Cam Ward, he played okay.
Shout out to Tony Pollard. Tony Pollard went crazy.
Yeah, but Shedeur balled out. Had 364. Some passing tugs, a rushing tug. And they're in the position to tie the game up, and what do the Browns do? Take them off the field and run arguably the worst 2-point conversion play I have ever seen in my life. Like, it was horrible. And I know that they've announced him as the starter for the remainder of the season. That's cool. But it's like, and I know it's against the Titans, who their defense has some pieces, you know, Big Jell, Cedric Gray. It's not that great of a defense. But it's like, bro, when are you just going to say, like, hey, he's made plays, he's shown that he can make plays, let's just stick with him and stop all the shenanigans? Because to have him not on the field for that 2-point conversion was so dumb.
It was a stupid decision. I mean, I'm team fire Stefanski and Andrew Berry. I don't understand what they're waiting on. I don't get it. Like, the offense has been at best average throughout his time there. Maybe a little above average when Baker was there, but it hasn't been that. Andrew Berry, he's so hit or miss with bringing in players. It just makes no sense to me why they keep that personnel group together. And it may never make sense to me. But, yeah, that was a very stupid decision. That's it. All right, let's move on to our most impressive players of the week. Offensively, I'm going running back Jahmyr Gibbs. Had 120 scrimmage yards and 3 touchdowns against the Cowboys. But even more impressively, he's already tying Barry Sanders' record. So we know how amazing Barry Sanders was. Tied Barry Sanders with the most touchdowns before turning 24, as well as most touchdowns in the first three seasons. And his season's still going, so he's likely going to break that record, assuming he stays healthy. Both that 47 a clip, that's got to give him the edge for that.
Yeah, I'm going to go Jahmyr Gibbs, too.
My defensive player of the week, our most impressive defensive player, I'm going Seahawks rookie safety Nick Amawari, who was all over the field this past week against Atlanta. Has six tackles, a sack, an interception, blocked a field goal, was really out there balling. And as someone who loved him coming out of South Carolina, it's good seeing him get his much-deserved flowers.
I'm going to go Myles Garrett. I can't lie. I don't think he broke the record this game, he still balled out. I think he had, two sacks?
Oh, he only had one sack.
Gotcha. But still, it's Myles Garrett.
And then my rookie of the week, I mean, obviously, I got to go Shedeur. 23 of 42 passing, 364 passing yards, 3 touchdowns, 29 rushing yards, something he doesn't really do, and had a rushing touchdown as well. Much deserved with his flowers.
Yeah, I'm going Shedeur as well.
And then most disappointed player, again, love me some Jalen Hurts. Have a lot of respect for Jalen Hurts, but it can't be nobody but Jalen Hurts. 21 of 40 for 240 passing yards, 4 picks, that lost fumble on that goofy-ass play. Just, I expect him to be better, but I also expect him to not be this bad. We have never seen him be this bad and careless with the ball, even though I will admit some of those picks were not his fault.
Yeah, it's Jalen for me as well.
All right, let's go ahead and move on. Take a look at the current playoff picture. Starting in the AFC, if the playoffs started today, the Broncos will hold the 1 seed, Patriots will hold the 2 seed, Jags will hold the 3 seed, Steelers 4 seed, Chargers would hold that 5 seed, Bills would hold that 6 seed, and Texans would hold that 7 seed, with the Colts, Ravens, and Chiefs on the outside looking in. So those wild card weekend matchups, if they were to stand, would be Patriots and Texans, Jags and Bills, and Steelers versus Chargers. Of those matchups, which one would you most be looking forward to seeing?
Repeat it one more time.
We got Patriots and Texans, Jags and Bills, Steelers, Chargers.
Taking out the obvious, I would say Patriots and Texans, just because of the Patriots. Both defenses are really good. And also, I like the quarterback matchup of C.J. Stroud versus Drake May.
Yeah, I would go that way too, because y'all know me. I love me some good defensive football. These are the two of the best defenses in the league. Yeah. Pay good. Well, let me not lie. Spend some lot of time watching that game just to see the defensive play. All right, looking at the NFC side of things, right now the Rams hold down the number 1 seed. Then the Packers are the 2 seed. The Eagles are the 3rd seed. Panthers, with the Bucks lost last night, are the 4th seed. Seahawks are the 5th seed. Niners are the 6th seed, and Bears are the 7th seed, with the Lions, Bucks, and Cowboys on the outside looking in. Now, if the playoffs were to start today, it'd be Packers versus Bears, Eagles versus Niners, and Panthers versus Seahawks. Same question, which wild card matchup would you be most looking forward to seeing if things stayed the same?
My real answer is Packers versus Bears. Again, division, they played some really good games. But I also, for a personal reason that you know about, it would have to be the Panthers versus Seahawks. Because, and you know this, but the people listening don't. I have a coworker that has been dying on this hill saying that Bryce Young is a top 15 quarterback. And I want to see him in the playoffs, because if he messes the bed, I got so much noise to talk.
As you should, because no. Like, low-key, the Bucks are just giving up their playoff spot, but they play the Panthers twice, so it's going to be very, very interesting. I would say, you know what? I'm going to say Eagles-Niners, because y'all remember that chatter a few years ago when they were in the NFC Championship. Brock Purdy got hurt, and so they had to – and then they were like, oh, the Niners like, oh, well, if we had a quarterback, we would have won that game. Blah, blah, blah. Well, now you got your quarterback. Let's see if you win. And yes, the Eagles are floundering right now. They are a dumpster fire. But can the Niners actually do it? Who knows? But yeah, that'd be the one I'd want to see. Packers Bears is going to be really, really good. But we're going to get that, what, week 18 again? Week 7? No, not 17. 18, I think. So that'd be like three straight weeks. Oh, not three straight, but two straight weeks of it. So either way, very interested to see how it's going to shake out. All right, let's go ahead and move on. Turn our attention to the rest of week 15. While we were recording last week, it came out that Darius Slay told the Buffalo Bills that he would not be reporting to the team and is instead taking time away to think about his future and potentially retire. Now, we've had a lot of great DBs retire in the past few years, and Darius Slay may not be Hall of Fame worthy, but still was very productive in his career. Getting drafted in the first round of the 2013 draft, finished his career with, finished his career with 465, I'm definitely lied, hold on. Okay, 655 tackles, had one sack, two fumble recoveries for a touchdown, was big play Slay for a reason, always was near a ball, had 28 picks with a career high 8 in the 2017 season. He is a first-team All-Pro member, won a Super Bowl with the Eagles last year, 6-time Pro Bowler. Like I said, may not have enough to be in the Hall of Fame, but where would you rank Darius Slay of the great corners in the past 10 to 15 years?
I do think he's going to make the Hall of Fame. Really? He might not be a first baller, but I think he makes it.
What? He's not making it over Sherm. He's not making it over Patrick Peterson. He was really good. I think what might have hurt him is just like the overall accolades aren't there. But I mean, he was great. But I don't know if we ever lived in a world where he was the best cornerback in the league.
I think if somebody broke it. It was a thing where somebody broke it down. I forget it was a video or something I listened to, and that was like most Hall of Fame DBs got at least around 30 picks as a part of their career numbers, and he too off.
Yeah.
So I think obviously Sherm and Pat P, they're going to be in before he will, but I think there is going to be a situation where somewhere down the line he going to get added to the Hall of Fame.
I love it for him. Like I said, big Darius Slay fan. If he gets in, that'd be awesome. I just don't know if he has the accolades, but he could the committee could prove me wrong. They definitely got a few players who need to get in first, a la Reggie freaking Wayne. But that's a whole nother conversation. All right, let's go ahead and move on to some moves around the league. Starting with the Bengals deciding to waive second-year wide receiver Jermaine Burton. He was suspended for the Bills game, one of many issues he's had since being drafted to the team last April, and they finally say, you know what, we're good releasing him. Next up, the Buccaneers decided to bring in veteran pass rusher Jason Pierre-Paul, signing him to their practice squad. I don't believe he played last night. We'll see how much playing time he's going to get. My Ravens continue to sign players in-house. Next up being defensive tackle Travis Jones, signing him to a 3-year, $40.5 million contract, which I like Travis, and we definitely need help at D-tackle, so him and Madubuike back together will be lovely. And then, of course, the biggest move of the week. After, like I mentioned earlier, it was announced that Daniel Jones' season is over due to a torn Achilles. Phillip Rivers, who has not played since 2020, where he was with the Colts, is back in the NFL. He signed with the He signed with the Colts practice squad. Yeah, but there is some expectation that he will be able to play on Sunday against Seattle. In his last season, he went 11-5 as a starter, at 4,169 yards, 24 touchdowns, 11 picks. Like I mentioned, got the Colts to the playoffs. They lost in the first round, but he did get them there. 44 years old, now the oldest player in the NFL. Man, I have a lot of thoughts. But let's just start off with the easiest one. Can he save Indy season, or do you think it's already a lost cause? Like I said, they got Seattle coming up, and that's going to be a tough game.
Yeah, it is. The reason I think it's a possibility that he could is because of the way the Indianapolis offense is structured. Like, it's not like, oh, we're gonna bring back in Phillip Rivers and we're gonna be dependent on him. Like, they have Jonathan Taylor, who for a good chunk of the season looked like the best running back in the whole NFL. So I think it's gonna be a heavy dose in him. They do have weapons that can make plays. I think they realistically, Phillip Rivers is just going to be a game manager. And so I could still potentially see them maybe sneaking in as a wild card. If that's what you consider saving the season, then sure. But I don't think it's going to be like, oh, he's going to lead them on this deep playoff run.
I don't think it's going to be enough. And the reason I say that is they got Seattle, who I think has a top 10 defense. Then they got the Niners, who, you telling me you got a 44-year-old quarterback in the pocket who can't move? Then you got the Jacksonville, whose pass rush has been hit or miss, but when they hit, they've been there, and then they wrap it up against the Texans. I'm not saying they got to win four straight, but like I said earlier, they're on the outside looking into the playoffs. If they win against Seattle, they have a 53% chance of making it. If they lose, that drops down to 24%. And right now, they have a 28% chance of making the playoffs. I hear what you mean about being a game manager, but the NFL has changed quite a bit in these last 5 years. Defenses continue to get faster. They continue to get smarter. And the Colts' offensive line is not bad by any means, but you're going up against some real good pass rushes. And at least in the case of Daniel Jones, he can move around a little bit. I think right now the Colts need more than a game manager if they want to make the playoffs, just considering their next four games. It's going to be tough. Because if this somehow gets into a shootout, we haven't seen Phillip Rivers handle a shootout in 5 years. I don't know if he can do it. I don't know what type of shape he's in, nothing like that. And again, he already wasn't known as some prolific mover. It's only going to be worse as you get older. So, because I love chaos, I'm excited to see how it turns out. But I think it's too little too late. I respect him for swinging, taking a big swing and giving it a shot, especially because it's not like he doesn't know the offense. I think processing everything will be fine. My question is the execution. And maybe we'll see Sunday, maybe next week, but I think it's a little too little too late. But then let's flip it and reverse it to the Daniel Jones side of things, who prior to this injury was looking like he could and probably should be the quarterback of the Colts' future. However, with that torn Achilles, which we all know is about at least an 8-month recovery time, he's not going to be able to play until maybe midway through the Colts season, barring some major change. How much do you think this injury affects his future with the Colts? Do you think that they still decide to re-sign him, maybe on a 1-year deal? Do they sign him long-term, or do they let him walk? Where do you think they decide to go with him?
I think they'll probably give him a 1-year deal, a 1-year prove-it deal, and max, too, because we all know whenever you're coming off an ACL injury, your best year isn't typically the first year back. It's the next year after. I think it could be a shorter deal to see what he has. Because, again, like, realistically, what are your – unless you draft somebody or you bring in one of these potential top kind of bridge free agent guys, like maybe a Mac Jones, maybe a Kyler – What's your real option at quarterback? So I think they are going to sign him to a shorter deal and kind of give him a chance to prove himself again.
I would bring him back on a shorter deal. Definitely not a case of, oh yeah, I'm 100% going to give this man the bag. No, I think his chance of getting like life-changing 4-year contract type money, I think those days are gone. Now, that could obviously change if he next year or possibly the year after. But, yeah, he's definitely missing out on some money. But I think because of how well the offense looked with him under center, I think that is going to play a very big role in them deciding to bring him back. Now, you technically don't have to drive somebody because you do still have Anthony Richardson. He's still there. I think black.
I don't want him touching my feel.
See, I get that completely. I believe me, you are heard and understood. But it's also like, he's there. He knows the system. And I mean, if it's not for a whole season, maybe you can make it work. Maybe. I don't know. But flip it and reverse it. You have the draft, but you don't have any first round picks. Because remember, you sent those to New York to get Sauce Gardner. Not saying you got to use a one because they have other needs that I put before a quarterback. But it's going to be a very interesting situation. I think Daniel Jones comes back, but maybe a 2-year deal. It's not going to be nothing too crazy. But all right, let's go ahead and move on to our game of believable or foolery. Keeping on the conversation of the Colts and their quarterbacks. Now, while Phillip Rivers has a job after retiring, Cam Newton still does not have an NFL job, which he has made abundantly clear. He feels at least some sort of way about calling it a slap in the face, saying if Phillip Rivers sent any type of deals that he was available, I mean, any type of signs that he was available, why are you asking me to do that? Why are you asking me to do something that everybody else didn't do? Now, Cam Newton is significantly younger than Phillip Rivers, sitting at 36, while, of course, Rivers is 44. Cam Newton last played a couple years ago with the, 2021 with the Panthers. And during that season, you know, it wasn't the prettiest. Started 5 games, went 0-for-5, completed 69 of 126 passes for 684 yards, had 4 touchdowns, 5 picks. Also ran the ball a little bit, but obviously not to the standard that we know Cam Newton can run the ball. Just rushed for 230 yards with 5 touchdowns. Now, my answer, for me, this answer is very easy. But do you think it's believable or buffoonery that the Colts should have instead signed Cam Newton?
No. Because, again, Cam played one extra year than Phillip. Phillip's last year was 2020. Cam's last year was 2021. Yes, Cam is younger, but Cam also has had a, because of the style of play that he plays, he's had a plethora of injuries. He's never been the thrower of the football that Phillip Rivers has. Like, he has a strong arm, but from an accuracy standpoint, no. And also, Phillip Rivers has the edge because he already knows the Colts offense. Cam publicly said on his podcast when he went to New England how hard it was for him to try to figure out the offense in this short of a span of time. Like, I rock with Cam. You know this. Cam's my guy. Cam is probably my all, like, alongside with Lamar, Cam is my all-time favorite quarterback. Actually, no, he's my all-time favorite quarterback over Lamar. But, like, I hate to say it this way, but sometimes it's like, hey, bro, just go ahead and accept the fact that it's not going to happen again and just move on. You already have a platform where you do your podcast. You're on ESPN now. You've branched into that other part of your career. Like, you can feel some type of way because, like, Phillip Rivers is 44 years old or whatever. But also, you look at it. You didn't say this when Joe Flacco came back. You didn't say this when Aaron Rodgers came back. So, like, these are dudes that are also older than you. So, like, yeah, bro, just accept that this might not be for you anymore and move on with the rest of your life and go on from there. Because, again, when you listed out the stats, and I don't think Phillip Rivers is going to put up, like, miraculous numbers, but if you tell me a dude that played basically a year after you and was older than you, had 24 TDs and 11 interceptions throughout the course of a season, and was 11-5, and you tell me you started 5 games 0-5 and had 4 TDs and 5 picks, come on, bro.
I mean, I think why he's not at Aaron and Joe's head is because they haven't, like, left for years and came back. But,
I mean, Joe technically did.
No, he didn't. He was still in the league.
I mean, didn't Joe retire and then he came back?
No, Joe's never retired. He's just bounced around a lot.
Gotcha. At one point, but still.
But at the end of the day, no matter how you slice it, the last we saw of Phillip Rivers was better than the last we saw of Cam Newton. Like, that's really the beginning and end of the argument. Like, I hear you, Cam, and like, yeah, you're more athletic, I'm sure, and yeah, you're younger, but the last time we saw you on the NFL field, you did not look good. That's why it's been so long since you've gotten a job. Because realistically, with how long quarterbacks have been playing, you could still be in the league if you were playing well, but you're not. And so nobody wanted to sign you. And so therefore, thus far, you are not in the NFL. Now, I get feeling some type of way. I do. Because that'd be crazy to me. Could think like Phillip Rivers. But again, when you look at what he did and what you did, when you look at you're like you mentioned, your style of play, bro, like, it's just a recipe for disaster. Because the thing is, like I said, with Phillip Rivers and these pass rushers, defenses are only getting bigger, faster, and stronger. Cam, the stuff you were doing early in your career, you would get killed now. And let's not forget, you already are injury prone. How much worse do you think it's going to be 4 years away from the game and you're older? That bounce back is not going to be the same, brother. So, no, I think the Colts made the absolute... If it was between the two, they made the right decision, hands down.
Yeah. And also, this is another point, too. When you look at it, I mentioned it earlier, what will the coach need? They aren't going to need some guy to try to make some dynamic plays. They're going to need somebody that can just manage the game. And I trust Phillip Rivers from a mental standpoint in a obviously, we don't know exactly what his arm looks like, but just from a mental standpoint of understanding how to manage the game and move the game, I trust him more than I trust Cam in that manner.
100%. Because I'm not going to lie to you, regardless of who the quarterback was, your job is to just give the ball to Jonathan Taylor. That's really all. Like, quick passes to Tyler Warren and them. Just give the ball to Jonathan Taylor. It's a very, very simple formula. Do that, and at worst, we'll be okay. At worst. But all right, let's go ahead and move on to our next question, keeping on the quarterback train. Joe Burrow got some people a little worried when he was asked about, you know, his comment. I mean, not comments, but asked about his future and continuing to play in the NFL, saying, if I want to keep doing this, I have to have fun doing it. I've been through a lot. If it's not fun, then what am I doing it for? And obviously people jumped to the Andrew Luck comparison because it wasn't that long ago when out of nowhere he just said, you know what, I'm going to retire. Terrible timing. Still can't believe he did it the day of a preseason game that close to the start of the season. Neither here nor there. But it's got people thinking, could Joe Burrow be the next one to do it? I mean, like Andrew Luck, he's been hit a lot, has shown flashes of brilliance, but injuries have kept him off the field. Essentially, people are saying it has shades of Andrew Luck, with another social media fan saying that the organization, a la the Bengals, have been an absolute dumpster fire that has consistently wasted talent over the years. It's been rough, but how rough has it been? Do you think it's believable or buffoonery that the Bengals should be worried about Joe, quote-unquote, pulling an Andrew Luck?
I think so, because... When you were going on your spiel earlier talking about they should use every resource imaginable to fix their defense, me personally, I love defense. I do. Love it dearly. But before I even think about that, I got to get an O-line for Joe Burrow. Like, he's been in the league how many years?
Since 2020.
So, and he's only been healthy for three. And play like a full season for three of those years. And a big part of that, he's been one of the most set quarterbacks. I'm going to be real. Yeah, you can allocate some stuff to the defensive side of the ball, but when you have a guy, every franchise quarterback that we have seen has always had a consistent, solid O-line. And the ones that haven't lasted and haven't gone that far. Like, you look, prime example, Andrew Luck. Like, he was the guy. He was great, but he kept getting hit, and he kept taking his toll. And I think the only realistic way to prevent Joe Burrow from potentially pulling the Andrew Luck is they have to invest real resources into their O-line. They have to stop being cheap. They have to stop thinking like, oh, we can just have T, Jamar, and Joe, and we'll be good. Like, no, y'all got to get some dudes that can block for him because he gets killed every Sunday.
See, I agree that I think he could pull an Andrew look. Like, especially, like, if he, the injuries mount up, it'll just be too much. Obviously, I hope he doesn't. But my argument to that is winning also cures all. We have seen Joe play behind some horrible offensive lines. The one that got to the Super Bowl, I know none of them are still in the league, and they damn sure not starting. But you go to a Super Bowl, okay. That offensive line, like I said, it still sucked. But the big difference between them, that squad, and what they have now is that their defense was at least average. They could help out their offense. This year, even with a better offensive line than what he's had, the defense can't stop nobody. It is the worst defense in the league and one of the worst defenses in history. So, yes, 100% they need to help that offensive line, but you're not even giving your offense a chance. We've heard it said multiple times in the past 2 years. That team has to play damn near perfect. The offense has to play damn near perfect to win a game because their defense is not going to give them a shot. So that's why I say they need to allocate defense resources to that defense. Because you can give Joe the line all you want to, but if your defense is still giving up 40 points a game.
This is my rebuttal to that. And it's going to the Joe Burrow, Andrew Luck comparison. When Andrew Luck retired, everybody was shocked because they were winning football games, right?
Not just that. They were more so shocked because the previous year he only got sacked 15 times. That's why everybody was so shocked. The offensive line was finally fixed, and he still left.
And I think, but they still go, okay, the offensive line was fixed, but they were still winning football games. Okay, you can say, allocate, winning cures all. Winning doesn't cure all when it's like I'm taking a beating every week. Because he said, like, yes, winning does cure a lot of things, but if I'm taking a beating every week, that doesn't cure the ailments of my body. Like, that doesn't cure me being in a position where, like, each hit I take, it lessens my ability to continue to play this game. That's why I think, like, I personally think you have to do both simultaneously. It's not one or the other. But I do think that they have to, in order to, like, realistically keep him, you know, as a part of the franchise, like, okay, yes, the defense can get better, but you also got to protect the franchise quarterback. So I think you have to do both simultaneously. It's not one or the other because, okay, my defense gets stops, but then if I go out there and I get sacked, and I keep getting hit, I'm going to look and be like, hey, this still ain't fun. Because my defense getting stops, but I can't produce because I'm getting hit, because I can't block.
But I would also say an alternative to that, the reason why Joe Burrow has to draw back so often is because they are always in these shootouts. They're always in these games where their offense has to step up, and it's in crunch time. They can't run the ball. They can't consistently run the ball, which is forcing them to have to throw the ball more. Like, I agree.
Which also, if they can't consistently run the ball, that gives more of a reason to invest in the O-line.
But I'm saying in the sense of in these shootout games, they don't have time to run the ball. They have to throw the ball because they got to score quick. We saw it in this Bills game. In this fourth quarter, they forgot the run. Who needs it? Because it was crunch time, which I understand completely. I just, like I said, both are important. Like, and you mentioned this. They have to do both, but that defense is atrocious. You cannot win in this defense. Again, we saw last year Joe was healthy, and the offense was one of, if not the best in the league. But that defense cost him. That defense wasted that talent. Again, don't get twisted. Both are bad, but you gotta fix that defense. Offensively, I'm sorry, go ahead. Yeah.
No, I was just gonna say both are bad. I just personally think, because this is the thing, you can make a couple moves in free agency and their defense can change. I personally just think you have a guy that's getting, like, a guy that has the potential to be an all-time great. and he's getting killed. Because even if you, again, even if you get stops and you don't get in shootout games, like, Joe, realistically, regardless, Joe Burrow is going to throw the ball at least 30 times a game, regardless, even if they aren't in shootouts. Most quarterbacks in the NFL throw the ball around 30 times a game. And if he's getting hit 10 to 15 times out of 30 and you getting stops, he still puts you behind the eight ball. I think you just got to figure out a way to do both at the same time.
And I don't disagree. The offensive line can be better, but this is still the best. The past 2 years, this is the best offensive line he's had. And I'm not saying that's a good thing, but I'm saying they still have been able to put up points. Like this year, Joe Flacco was sacked, what, in 6 games, 9 times. In 5 games, Jay Bryant was sacked 9 times. And in 4 games, Joe Burrow has been sacked 7 times. They're getting hit. But comparatively, this is much better than how it's been. Again, not saying it's good, but they have, I'll say this, they have allocated more resources offensively to that offensive line. They spent a first-round pick on Amarius Mims. They paid Orlando Brown. They paid Ted Karras to come back. They just spent a third-round pick on Dylan Fairchild. And, oh my gosh, I'm going to remember the other dude's name when I do not care. But they have put more effort into fixing that offensive line than fixing their defense, and it has shown. Obviously, the most important thing is keeping Joe Burrow happy and keeping Joe Burrow healthy. But I'm just saying, winning also makes people happy because, unfortunately, it's football. You're going to get hit. It's an inevitability. You can have the best offensive line. You're still going to get touched. It happens. But at least give your team a chance to thrive. Give them a chance. Because this Bengals team, like we saw it on quarterback with Joe Burrow, like the frustration of you have to be perfect to win because your defense can't stop nobody. Yes, offensive line is important and there's work that needs to be done, but it pales in comparison to how bad that defense has consistently been. We're not talking about the Bengals offensive line being one of the worst in history. We're talking about the Bengals defense being the worst in history. All right, before we go ahead and move on to our game picks, let's go ahead and talk more about Jalen Hurts, who fans following that rough outing against the Chargers are calling for him to be benched, which head coach Nick Sirianni shut that down with a quick list, saying that those thoughts are ridiculous. But if you check social media, like I said, a lot of fans are calling for Jalen Hurts' job. You and I both talked about it a bit. But do you think it's believable or buffoonery that Jalen Hurts, after this year, is done as the Eagles starter?
No. Like, unless Howie Roseman does some, which he has done, but figures out a way to bring in a franchise quarterback out of the blue, Jalen Hurts is going to be the starter.
Yeah. Now, I'll say this. I think they're going to make the playoffs. If it's another situation, what year was that, 2023, where they start the season hot, hit a skid, got bounced in the first round, I could see them potentially drafting somebody, maybe third, fourth round. And obviously this isn't to say, oh yeah, he's definitely going to be our starter. But you get somebody to be like, hey, Jalen, just so you know, it's not guaranteed. But that's the only realistic way I see it happening. Like, Jalen Hurts is going to be the starter. Like, this year has been a disappointment, but there is no world we live in where you look at the Eagles and say the biggest problem has been Jalen Hurts. The biggest problem has been Kevin Petula.
Yeah, I was just about to say that. I think he's gone before Jalen's gone.
Oh, 100%. It's easier to fire a coordinator than it is to get rid of a franchise quarterback you're paying over $200 million.
Like, I'm gonna keep it a bang with you. He's going to be out the door. And depending on how it looks, the first person whose name I'm going to hit up is Mike McDaniel.
100%. Mike McDaniel or Brian Daboll. One of the two. I've seen Brian Daboll's offenses for the past 2 years, and you have said lost to those Giants offenses. No. Capitula is gone. Even though I will say it is weird if y'all like egging his house, like, don't do that. But no. Jalen Hurts, again, it hasn't been pretty. But honestly, Jalen Hurts has been Jalen Hurts. The Jalen Hurts that we have seen for most of the season is pretty much who Jalen Hurts is. The rare exceptions are those Super Bowl games and this year's game against the Vikings where he threw for over 300 yards. The quarterback has like, not changed.
Yeah, like the Eagles have never really needed him to be crazy.
No. Besides the Super Bowl this year. Because, what's it called? Saquon wasn't really doing much. That's it. And it's worked. It has worked out very, very well. So it's just, and like I said, this is by far the worst game he's had. Usually he's pretty efficient. He's not turning the ball over that much, if at all. But, you know, for the detractors, for the ones saying he's not top 10, for the people saying he's not good, he gave them ammunition. I will give them that. He did not help his cause at all. But, all right, let's go ahead and make our game picks for week 15. We like I mentioned earlier, last night we saw an impressive comeback win for the Falcons over the Bucks. Honestly, the Bucks need their butts kicked after that game. Next up, we got the Washington Commanders taking on the New York Giants. Mariota versus Dart. I'm going Giants.
Yeah, I'm going to go Giants.
Next up, we got the Philadelphia Eagles looking to get back on track against the Las Vegas Raiders. Kenny Pickett is set to start. I've said this before. This should be a game that the Eagles dominate, but because of how their offense is played this year, I don't know if they are capable of dominating anybody, but I'm still picking them to win. Because if they don't win, oh, all hell is going to break loose.
Yeah, I'm picking Philly.
Next up, we got the Chicago Bears looking to get back on track, taking on the Cleveland Browns. I'm going Bears. My Ravens hoping to end a two-game losing skid to the team that started it all, the Cincinnati Bengals. I'm going Ravens because I'm going to have faith that we're not going to commit four turnovers this time. Please.
I'm going to go Ravens.
Next up, we got the Houston Texans facing off against the Arizona Cardinals. I got Texans.
Texans.
Buffalo Bills in a big game against the New England Patriots. If the Patriots win, not only do they lock up a playoff spot, but they also win their first division title since, 2019? Something like that. I think it's going to be a good game, but I think it's hard to beat the Bills twice in 1 year. I'm going Buffalo.
Sorry, I'm going to go Buffalo.
All right, next up we got Jacksonville Jaguars taking on the New York Jets. Brady Cook is set to get the start. Aaron Glenn just announced that. I mean, it doesn't really matter. I was going to pick the Jags anyway.
Same.
Next up, Kansas City Chiefs hoping to keep their season alive, taking on the Los Angeles Chargers. It's tough being the Chiefs twice in a season, too. So, with that being said, I'm going to go with the Chiefs.
I'm going to go Chargers.
Next up, we got the Seattle Seahawks taking on the Indianapolis Colts, and maybe Phillip Rivers getting his first start since 2021. I'm going Seahawks. I mean, it didn't really matter who the quarterback was. I was going to pick Seattle anyway.
Yeah, Seattle.
All right, San Francisco 49ers returning from their bye to take on Cam Ward and the Titans. I ain't going to lie to you. I don't think this game is going to be close. I got Niners.
Niners.
Next up, we got the Green Bay Packers, which in a game that should be a good defensive battle, taking on the Denver Broncos. I'm going to go Packers because I trust Jordan Love more than I trust Bo Nix.
That's tough. Because Jordan Love known for throwing a bad interception.
Yeah, but Bo Nix doesn't start working until the fourth quarter.
I think I'm going to go Denver.
Carolina Panthers with a chance to take a lead in the division, head into New Orleans to face the Saints, who have already beaten them this year. I'm going to go Panthers in a game that is much closer than it probably should be.
Panthers.
Next up, we got the Los Angeles Rams taking on the Detroit Lions. Big game for both sides, but I'm going to go Rams because I respect Kelvin Shepard and the way he has that secondary plan despite them being so hampered. But it's the Rams. It's Puka Nacua. It's Devontae Adams. It's a lot of horses you were asked to stop. And Matthew Stafford's in the way.
I'm going Rams, too.
All right, Sunday Night Football. The Minnesota Vikings headed to Jerry World to face the Cowboys. This feels like a game where it should be... when you look at the talent on both sides of the ball, it should be a shootout. I just don't trust J.J. McCarthy to handle a shootout. And so, with that being said, I'm going with the Dallas.
Why didn't they snatch this game?
I don't. Your guess is as good as mine. I have no idea.
Because the Rams and Lions should be Sunday night.
Oh, 100%. 100%.
But I'm going to go Cowboys because, yeah, I don't trust J.J. McCarthy.
And then Monday Night Football. The Pittsburgh Steelers looking to make it two straight wins as they head to South Beach to, I'm sorry, as the Dolphins come to town. I got Steelers.
Yeah, I got Steelers.
All right, let's talk offensive, defensive, and rookies we're watching this week. Offensively, I'm watching my boy Justin Jefferson. He said after the win against the Commanders, it's better to not really get the ball and win as opposed to not get the ball and lose. I am hoping that on Sunday he gets the ball a lot because he is better than anybody the Cowboys can match up against him.
Offensively, it has to be Phillip Rivers.
The only reason why I didn't go with him is because, like, that's the really easy answer. And everybody's going to say that. But I am very much looking forward to that game. Defensively, I'm watching the entire Lions secondary. Like I mentioned earlier, Terrion Arnold is done for the year. Brian Branch is done for the year. We don't know when Kirby Joseph is going to come back. And while they have done a solid job of keeping it together in the mean and in between time, again, you got the Rams coming to town. I want to see how they do it, if they can do it.
For me, defensively, is Nick Herbman. The news of T.J. Watt has a small hole in his lung, so it's looking like he might not be playing on Monday. And insert Nick Herbman, who, hot take, at times has looked better than both T.J. and Alex Highsmith this season.
Yeah, that's fair. And then the rookie I'm watching is Travion Henderson. The last time the Bills and Patriots squared off, Travion Henderson, I think he played, but he didn't have much of an impact. Now he's truly the Patriots RB1. I want to see how the Bills can respond against him because, again, they have been terrible against the run this year.
Same, Travion Henderson.
All right, and the team I'm calling out for obvious reasons, Baltimore.
Pittsburgh, don't lose to Miami, bro.
All right, let's go ahead and move on to the NBA. Starting with sending prayers up to former NBA player Jason Collins, who has announced that he has been diagnosed with stage 4 glioblastoma. It is a form of brain cancer, which unfortunately is one of the deadliest forms. So sending prayers and love to him as he works to fight against that battle. Hope that he recovers well. So, yes, thoughts and prayers with him. All right. Who is your Eastern Mamba of the week?
Eastern Mamba. I'm going to go Jalen Brunson.
We are in agreement. I also have Jalen Brunson. What about your Western Mamba?
Nikola.
Yeah, 2 for 2. All right. Your rookie Mamba.
Rookie. I'm going to go Dylan Harper. Actually, I'm going to go Derrick Queen. He's been hooping.
Yes, I also have Derrick Queen, and then what was that? I saw the stat. He was the first rookie in NBA history to drop a 30-point triple-double. Had 33, 10, and 10, and 4 blocks against the Spurs, I think. Had an amazing game, so giving him his flowers. All right, let's talk takeaways of the week, starting at number 3. You can go first.
Number 3, it looks for all the talk about LeBron being washed after his streak of having 10 plus scoring games. Andy, it looks like he heard it and was like, all right, bet. And ever since then, he's looked like the old king of old, been stepping up, making big plays, and the Lakers are reaping the benefits.
My number 10 is, I don't know if you heard the news that Jason Tatum is back doing one-on-ones. And Joe Mazzulla was asked about it. He was like, it's up to him. No, the hell it's not. You don't have a choice. Because obviously, if you have a choice, you're going to want to play. Bro, we don't want you to risk it. We've seen too many times players try to rush a return to the court, and then they exacerbate their injuries and end up more hurt than they already were. Listen, it's great that you're doing one-on-ones. It's great that you're feeling like yourself. That's beautiful. We'll see you next year.
I mean, I would agree. My number two is with the emergence of Derrick Queen being the type of player that he looks like he's about to be, I would not be surprised if this is the last year of Zion in New Orleans.
Honestly, I would trade him now. I mean, why keep him? He ain't playing.
Like, I feel like you won't. Honestly, I don't think you'll be right. I don't think you'll be able to trade him right now because of him being injured. I think it's gonna have to be an off-season thing where, like, either I know they got all them incentives in his contract to where they could just outright release him. I think he's gonna get outright released by the Pelicans.
My biggest thing is, like, I'd rather trade him for something. Like, yeah, he's hurt, but you can at least get something. If you release him, he just gone to be gone. Like, at least give me something in return. Because now, what you could have got for him compared to what you could have got for him a year ago is a steep difference. And it'd be crazy if they did just outright release him. I'd understand it, though, because, I mean, the best ability is availability, and that brother has not been available.
And that's why I think it is hard to try to trade him, because if I'm a team that potentially wants to add Zion and you tell me, like, hey, to try to trade for him, I'm gonna be like, no. Why would I trade for damaged goods where I know if I don't make this trade, you're gonna release him, and then I could try to get him on a deal that works better for my team.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see how it works out. If I'm the Pelicans, I'm leaving here with something. I don't know what. It's because you're not gonna get a crazy haul, but just something. My number two is the NBA always reminds us that they know better than we do. Because I remember when the Raptors traded for Brandon Ingram last year, we both were like, why would y'all do that? And as it turns out, the reason why they're doing it is because he's been great. I'd argue he's been their best player this year. I mean, been on a string of 30-point games. He had that, what was that, 7-point game or whatever. I don't remember who it was against. But overall, he's been a really, really good add for him. Has played really, really well off of Scottie Barnes. Obviously, the team has hit a bit of a skid as of late, but they started off the season hot and definitely showed that with B.I. and Scottie Barnes leading the charge, they could be pretty interesting.
Man, B.I. winning off the court, he got glow. I ain't gonna even lie. My number one is, I know we've already seen a great team from the record standpoint, but I'm gonna be real. This OKC team might smash their record easily, and I hate to see it happening because I don't like OKC at all. I like Shea as a person, but when he step on the court, I hate him. I hate the team.
Why?
But they're in our division.
Okay.
Like, in the Western Conference, all of this stuff. Two, like, the part of the reason why I don't like them is I feel like they were the grittiest team of old before Ja got in trouble.
That's real.
Like, when you see them doing all the post-game stuff where the whole team comes around, whoever is going crazy, all of this stuff, the Grizzlies did that in 2023, and now they're doing it, and they're like the darling of the NBA. So, and also, again, we played them in the playoffs last year, and I hate it. So, but I do realistically think that I don't know when they're going to take, like, their next L, the way they've been playing.
Yeah, they've been amazing. My number one is, ultimately, I think the Mavericks are going to trade AD. The question is, which AD are you going to get? Are you going to get the AD that's dropping 30? Like what he had against the Rockets, dropped 29 points, 8 boards. Are you going to get AD who can't stay healthy? Are you going to get the AD against Oklahoma who only had 2 points in 24 minutes? Like, he's gone. Because I think I saw Bulls and somebody. I think I saw it. Was it Knicks? It was somebody else in the East. But it's like, is it worth it? Like, because when he's great, he's really good. But it's like, when is he going to be there? What more are you going to get out of him? That's just my biggest question. But all right, let's go ahead and move on to some news around the league. Unfortunately, quite a couple of injuries that have taken place. Starting things off, of course, with the Mavericks, where they announced that Derek Lively II is done for the year after undergoing a procedure on his right foot. Grizzlies second-year center Zach Edey is going to be out at least the next 4 weeks with a stress fracture in his left ankle. And then Magic forward Franz Wagner is out indefinitely as he recovers from a high left ankle sprain. No notable roster moves to talk about. So we're moving on to our game of believable or buffoonery, which should be fairly quick. And it pertains to a guy we were talking about earlier in Zion Williamson and his draft cohort, Ja Morant. Now, fans have never been one to be shy on social media, with one tweeting out, Zion Williamson and Ja Morant have made the 2019 NBA draft the most disappointing class in recent memory, adding, these two were supposed to be the future faces of basketball. Zion Williamson was the most hyped prospect since LeBron, and in reality, he's the most problematic number one pick in years. The injuries, the detachment from his team, the off-court drama, disaster. Ja Morant, he was on that superstar trajectory, but the off-court drama, the injuries, the lack of accountability, he was great, but there was too many imperfections that caught up to him and made him crash. There's some really good depth in this class with Darius Garland, Tyler Hero, RJ Barrett, Naz Reid, and a ton of good role players, but stars are often the face of their draft classes, and having Ja and Zion represent this class leaves a stain that will forever hurt this draft's perception. Do you think that's believable or buffoonery that Ja and Zion make the 2019 draft class overall disappointing?
I'm going to say buffoonery because, again, I'm trying to remember their draft class overall. But, like,
because what? I know RJ went went fourth. Darius Garland was in there. Naz Reid was there. Tyler Hero. DeAndre Hunter, Jackson Hayes, Jared Culver, Rui Hachimura, PJ Washington, Cameron Johnson, Cam Reddish. I love Cam Reddish coming out. Nikhil Alexander Walker.
Yeah. I'm going to say buffoonery because to go to the argument of people remember stars from draft classes. There are draft classes where I don't remember the stars that came out of their draft class. And the stars also might not have been the first and second person that was drafted. So, yes, for their individual careers, yes, but for a whole draft class, I can't say that.
Yeah, I'd say buffoonery as well. I mean, I don't think two players make a draft, especially when it comes to the NBA draft, because there's so many misses among a handful of hits. Like, yes, Ja and Zion have not panned out the way everyone expected and thought that they would, but, like, it could be worse. Like, we're not going to sit here and act like Anthony Bennett wasn't a first overall pick. Like, Zion is Zion, but, like, give me Anthony Bennett. Like, I'm going to call it buffoonery, but especially because there are so many good role players and depth guys in the draft. I also forgot about Kobe White. Like, there were good dudes in that draft. I'm not just going to ignore that because of Ja and Zion. All right, this isn't a believable or buffoonery. It's a what's more likely, and it has to do with the future of CP3. Now, we talked about it last week with the Clippers making the decision to send him home, cutting short his retirement tour. However, there are two schools of thought here. One, him potentially signing with the contender, which is something that, Chandler Parsons said he'd like to see, saying he'd like to see Chris Gowan on top, potentially signing with Houston, Detroit, Minnesota, whereas Lou Will was on the opposite side of the coin saying, I think we've seen the last of Chris Paul. I've had several conversations with him about this. He said he was at peace. So, Ethan, what do you think is more likely? Him playing more, or do you think it's just over for CP3?
I could see him signing with Houston at some point. Maybe not now, but maybe towards the back end of the season. I can hear Lou Will where he obviously haven't had a conversation, but where he says like he's at peace. But also, like, we all know the competitor that Chris Paul has been, and he probably definitely wants to go out on top. So I can see him, and Houston has a need for point guard. So I can see him later in the season, maybe spending some time with his family, you know, signing to a team?
My biggest question is, because his biggest thing, like when he was in Fred, was like he wanted to stay close to home, which was in California, in LA. So if he wants to keep doing that, I could understand him wanting to stay. But I mean, one last ride, like you mentioned, the Rockets do need a point guard. But I mean, they still been successful without one. But you know, it never hurts. I think it's probably over, especially because it's not like he was playing all that great prior to, you know, leaving. I mean, yeah. So in that retrospect, if I'm the Rockets, is he significantly better than what I already have? Like, yeah, he brings a veteran presence and all that, but like on court, is he that much of a jump? I mean, but all the teams that, you know, were mentioned by Chandler Parsons, they all could use him. And I mean, if not for any other reason in Detroit, he could just be like a mentor for Cade, who's been playing great. But when it's all said and done, I think this is probably it. He doesn't, CP3 doesn't strike me as like a LeBron or one of those guys who like, they want their time. You know what I'm saying? Like, I think he's good. I think he's all right. But all right, that is the end of our show. Thank you guys so much for listening. As always, please be sure to check out the export.net. I repeat, the export.net for exclusive sports content written by yours truly and fellow export writers. Previous episodes of our lovely podcast, our YouTube channel entitled The X Report. Ethan, anything you want to say before we get up out of here?
Go Grizz, go Tigers, go Steelers. So we have John Cena's retirement tour ending. Who do you think next up?
What do you mean in terms of next up? Like, who's like the face, like, or
the next big name in wrestling that you think gonna like retire and have a tour?
Now, does it have to be somebody like coming back or somebody who's already here?
It could be both. Yeah.
If we're talking about somebody who's already here, AJ Styles, he said he's going to retire next year. Give AJ his flowers. Just let him put on bangers against everybody. Like, he don't got to win nothing. Just let's just have fun. Let's see. Then I would go with somebody who's gone. The Rock definitely ain't gonna do it, and I don't think anybody wants him to. I can't think of anybody who's like, maybe Brock Lesnar, because he's like in and out, but it's like, does Brock need one? I don't know if he'd want one for real, because he'd have to work more often than he was already doing. So I don't know. I think the only person realistically who I can think of is AJ Styles, who again absolutely deserves one. Because I disagree with, what's it called, John saying that he's the greatest of all time. But he's definitely up there in terms of in-ring. Top 10 at worst in terms of the best in-ring talents I've ever seen.
I would say, obviously, AJ. The only other, I would say, maybe Randy. Because he also, he's getting up there in age. Yes, he still looks great and can perform well, but he also has been getting some injuries here and there. From a comeback standpoint, I would say Edge.
What is he doing at AEW? I don't watch AEW, so I have no idea.
I don't watch AEW, but if I'm not mistaken, I think his contract with AEW is supposed to be ending soon. So I could realistically see him coming back to WWE and having a retirement tour.
I mean, that'd be cool. I wouldn't be mad at it. I just don't know how much more wrestling he plans on doing. But, I mean, hey, if you want to come back, feel free. Yeah, I would not be mad at that. And Randy, the hard thing about Randy is Randy seemed like one of those dudes. If he could wrestle till it's over, he would. But he absolutely deserves a tour. I would argue it's not even an argument. He deserves a tour as much as John.
Yeah.
So I would love that. Now, who would you want to retire Randy Orton if he were to get one?
Who would I want to retire Randy? I'm trying to think. might say Drew.
Okay.
Just because I think there could be a decent, they've had like a decent rivalry and some decent matches. Or Cody, as much as I feel like Cody gets a lot in, is a lot right now. Like, if it were a situation where, like, let's say they do the whole, obviously the rumor is gonna be Cody Roman 3 at WrestleMania, but like, let's say they get past it and for Randy's farewell tour he goes back to being like heel Randy, or we get heel Cody and he retires Randy, I could live with that too.
That's real. I mean, I'm trying to think of like who's there. Cody would make a lot of sense. I still want Randy to be Cody. If it's not gonna be Drew who beats Cody for the title, it needs to be Randy. I'm gonna say that until it happens, and if it don't happen, then, you know, I'm still gonna be a little bitter about that. But of the current roster, who I'd want to see retire Randy? Cause it's not really many like young guns. He's had a lot of beef with.
Mm. Yeah, like all the young dudes really haven't interacted with him.
Yeah,
like the youngest might be Cody, and I don't even know how old Cody is.
And Cody's like mid to late 30s. Huh? Yeah, I might have to piggyback off you with Randy, because they did have like a world championship feud during COVID. Yeah, I'm a copy off your paper. I'm gonna go Randy too. Or are we just going totally young and new? Obafemi, because I want Obafemi to have the world.
I can see.
But yeah, very excited for his match against what's it called? Wow, my brain just died on me.
Cody.
Yes. And you know what? I would also say Seth. Seth would make sense to retire Randy. They were together in the Authority. Two guys who kind of similar vein. That'd probably be mine. Yeah, I'll stick with that. But all right, that is our show. Thank you guys so much for listening. As always, please be sure to check out TheExport.net. I repeat, TheExport.net for exclusive sports content written by yours truly and fellow export writers. Previous episodes of our lovely podcast and our YouTube channel entitled The X Report. Ethan, anything else you want to say before we get up out of here?
I mean, I'm going to try to watch Saturday Night's Main Event tomorrow. I work, but the way my job's set up, sometimes we get pockets of time where we don't really got much going on. So I'm going to try and throw it on. It'll be interesting to see, like, John's last match / retirement moment. And I also agree with you. He gives the vibe of, like, I was having a conversation about this with somebody, and they were saying, like, yeah, they throw the bag at John. He going to come back. But it's like, John's probably going to go full-time acting, so he won't need to come back.
No. And plus, especially if he making good money. Like, WWE pays you well, but, like, if he making good money in Hollywood, like, he's being in movies that make money, he going to be fine. Because, shoot, The Rock is he still the highest-paid actor?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I mean, they do similar movies, so it wouldn't shock me. But yeah,
I think John's a better actor than him.
I think Batista the best actor of all of them.
I agree.
Cause,
but
yeah,
between the two, I think John's the better actor than The Rock.
I think I agree, but The Rock has my favorite movie of the three. Pain and Gain is my jam. I love Pain and Gain. I can't think off the top.
Yeah.
In controversial opinion, of the John Cena movies he's done, this is going to sound crazy. My favorite one might still be The Marine. Maybe because I watched The Marine in 12 rounds a lot as a kid, because I had them on Blu-ray, or at least I had 12 rounds on Blu-ray. But like, of his newer ones, they cool, but I'm not that much into superheroes and stuff, so I'm not watching a lot of Peacemaker stuff.
Yeah, I feel it.
But yes. All right, thank y'all again so much for listening. In the next week or two, we got our end of the year WWE award show coming up. Very excited for that. And obviously more football and basketball coming y'all way. Thank y'all again for listening, and we'll see y'all next time.